fire beneath his. You don't need a partner for that. And you have one tonight. I intend to give as much pleasure as I get. I can't. She strained against him, bucked, but each frantic movement brought only a new and devastating sensation. Let go. He was mad to have her, but her struggle to hold back both challenged and infuriated. I can't. I'm going to make you let go, and I'm going to watch it happen. He slid back up her, feeling every tremble and quake until his face was close to hers again. He pressed his palm firmly on the mound between her thighs. Her breath hissed out, "You bastard." "I can't." "Liar," he said quietly, then slid a finger down, over her, into her. His groan melded with hers as he found her tight, hot, wet. Clinging to control, he focused on her face. The change from panic to shock, from shock to glazed helplessness. She felt herself slipping, battled back, but the pull was too strong. Someone screamed as she fell, then her body imploded. One moment the tension was vicious, then the spear of pleasure arrowed into her, so sharp, so hot. Dazed, disoriented, she went limp. He went mad. He dragged her up so that she was kneeling, her head heavy on his shoulder. "Again," he demanded, dragging her head back by the hair and plundering her mouth. "Again, goddammit." "Yes." It was building so quickly, the need like teeth grinding inside her. Free, her hands raced over him, and her body arched fluidly back so that his lips could taste where and how they liked. Her next climax ripped through him like claws. With something like a snarl, he shoved her onto her back, levered her hips high, and drove himself inside her. She closed around him, a hot, greedy fist. Her nails scraped at his back, her hips pistoned as he plunged. When her hand slid weakly from his sweat-slicked shoulders, he emptied himself into her. Chapter 11. She didn't speak for a long time. There really wasn't anything to say. She had taken an appropriate step with her eyes wide open. If there were consequences, she would pay them. Now she needed to gather whatever dignity she could scrape together and get out. "I have to go." With her face averted, she sat up and wondered how she was going to find her clothes. "I don't think so." Rourke's voice was lazy, confident, and infuriating. Even as she started to get off the bed, he snagged her arm, overbalanced her, and had her on her back again. "Look, fun's fun. It certainly is. I don't know as I'd qualify what just happened here as fun. I say it was too intense for that. I haven't finished with you, Lieutenant." When her eyes narrowed, he grinned. "Good. That's what I wanted to..." He lost his breath, and with it the words, when her elbow shot into his stomach. In the blink of an eye, she'd reversed their positions. That well-aimed elbow was now pressing dangerously on his windpipe. "Listen, pal. I come and go as I please, so check your ego." Like a white flag, he lifted his palms out for peace. Her elbow lifted a half inch before he shifted and sprang. She was tough, strong, and smart. That was only one more reason why, after a sweaty struggle, she was infuriated to find herself under him again. "Assaulting an officer will earn you 1 to 5, Rourke. That's in a cage, not cushy home detention." "You're not wearing your badge. Or anything else, for that matter." He gave her a friendly nip on the chin. "Be sure to put that in your report." So much for dignity, she decided. "I don't want to fight with you." It pleased her that her voice was calm, even reasonable. "I just have to go." He shifted, watched as her eyes widened, then fluttered half-closed when he slipped inside her again. "No, don't shut your eyes." His voice was whisper rough. So she watched him, incapable of resisting the fresh onslaught of pleasure. He kept the rhythm slow now, with long, deep strokes that stirred the soul. Her breath quickened, thickened. All she could see was his face. All she could feel was that lovely, fluid slide of his body in hers, the tireless friction of it that had an orgasm shivering through her like gold. His fingers linked with hers, and his lips curved on hers. She felt his body tighten an instant before he buried his face in her hair. They lay quiet, bodies meshed, but still. He turned his head, pressed a kiss to her temple. "Stay," he murmured. "Please?" "Yes." She closed her eyes now. "All right. Yes." They didn't sleep. It wasn't fatigue so much as bafflement that assaulted Eve when she stepped into Rourke's shower in the early hours of the morning. She didn't spend nights with men. Always she'd been careful to keep sex simple, straightforward, and yes, impersonal. Yet here she was, the morning after, letting herself be pummeled by the hot pulse of his shower sprays. For hours she'd let herself be pummeled by him. He'd assaulted, then invaded parts of her she'd thought impregnable. She was trying to regret it. It seemed important that she realize and recognize her mistake and move on, but it was difficult to regret anything that made her body feel so alive and kept the dreams at bay. "You look good wet, Lieutenant." Eve turned her head as Rourke stepped through the crisscrossing sprays. "I'm gonna need to borrow a shirt." "We'll find you one." He pressed a knob on the tiled walls, cupped his hand under a fount to catch a puddle of clear, creamy liquid. "What are you doing?" "Washing your hair," he murmured, and proceeded to stroke and massage the shampoo into her short, sopping cap of hair. "I'm going to enjoy smelling my soap on you." His lips curved. "You're a fascinating woman, Eve. Here we are, wet, naked, both of us half-dead from a very memorable night, and still you watch me with very cool, very suspicious eyes. You're a suspicious character, Rourke." "I think that's a compliment." He bent his head to bite her lip as the steam rose and the spray began to pulse like a heartbeat. "Tell me what you meant, the first time I made love to you when you said, 'I can't.'" He angled her head back, and Eve closed her eyes in defense as water chased the shampoo away. "I don't remember everything I said." "You remember." From another fount, he drew pale green soap that smelled of wild forests. Watching her, he slicked it over her shoulders, down her back, then around and up to her breasts. "Hadn't you had an orgasm before?" "Of course I have." True, she'd always equated them with the subtle pop of a cork from a bottle of stress, not the violent explosion that destroyed a lifetime of restraint. "You're flattering yourself, Rourke."
"Am I?"
Didn't she know that those cool eyes, that wall of resistance she was scrambling to rebuild, was an irresistible challenge? "Obviously not," he mused. He tugged lightly at her soap-slicked nipples, smiling when she sucked in a breath. "I'm about to flatter myself again." "I haven't got time for this," she said quickly, and found her back pressed against the tile wall. "It was a mistake in the first place. I have to go." "It won't take long." He felt a hard slap of lust when he cupped her hips, lifted her. "It wasn't a mistake then or now, and I have to have you." His breath was coming faster. It stunned him how much he could want her still, baffled him that she could be blind to how helpless he was under the clawing need for her. It infuriated him that she could, simply by existing, be his weakness. "Hold on to me," he demanded, his voice harsh, edgy. "God damn it, hold on to me." She already was. He pierced her, pinned her to the wall with an erection that filled her to bursting. Her frantic, helpless mewing echoed off the walls. She wanted to hate him for that, for making her a victim of her own rampant passions. But she held on to him and let herself spin dizzily out of control. He climaxed violently, slapped a hand on the wall, his arm rigid to maintain balance as her legs slid slowly off his hips. Suddenly he was angry, furious that she could strip away his finesse until he was no more than a beast rutting. "I'll get you a shirt," he said briskly, then stepped out, flicking a towel from a rack and leaving her alone in the billowing steam. By the time she was dressed, frowning over the feel of raw silk against her skin, there was a tray of coffee waiting in the sitting area of the bedroom. The morning news chattered quietly on the view screen, the curiosity corner at the lower left running fields of figures. The stock exchange, the monitor on a console was open to a newspaper. Not the Times, or one of the New York tabs, Eve noted. It looked like Japanese. "Do you have time for breakfast?" Rourke sat, sipping his coffee. He wasn't able to give his full attention to the morning data. He'd enjoyed watching her dress. The way her hands had hesitated over his shirt before she'd shrugged into it. How her fingers had run quickly up the buttons, the quick wriggle of hip as she'd tugged on jeans. "No, thanks." She wasn't sure of her moves now. He'd fucked her blind in the shower, then had withdrawn to play well-mannered host. She strapped into her holster before crossing to accept the coffee he'd already poured her. "You know, Lieutenant, you wear your weapon the way other women wear pearls. It's not a fashion accessory. You misunderstand. To some, jewelry is as vital as limbs." He tilted his head, studying her. "The shirt's a bit large, but it suits you." Eve thought anything she could wear on her back that cost close to a week's pay couldn't suit her. "I'll get it back to you. I have several others." He rose, unnerving her again by tracing a fingertip over her jaw. "I was rough before. I'm sorry." The apology, so quiet and unexpected, embarrassed her. "Forget it." She shifted away, drained her cup, set it aside. "I won't forget. Neither will you." He took her hand, lifted it to his lips. Nothing could have pleased him more than the quick suspicion on her face. "You won't forget me, Eve. You'll think of me, perhaps not fondly, but you'll think of me. I'm in the middle of a murder investigation. You're part of it. Sure, I'll think of you." "Darlin'," he began, and watched with amusement as his use of the endearment knitted her brow. "You'll be thinking of what I can do to you. Unfortunately, I won't be able to do more than imagine it myself for a few days." She tugged her hand free and reached, casually she hoped, for her bag. "Going somewhere?" "The preliminary work on the resort requires my attention and my presence on Freestar One for a number of meetings with the directorship. I'll be tied up a few 100,000 miles away for a day or two." An emotion moved through her she wasn't ready to admit was disappointment. "Yeah, I heard you wrapped the deal on that major indulgence for the bored rich." He only smiled. "When the resort's complete, I'll take you there. You may form another opinion. In the meantime, I have to ask you for your discretion. The meetings are confidential. There's still a loose end or two to tie up, and it wouldn't do for my competitors to know we're getting underway so quickly. Only a few key people will know I'm not here in New York." She finger-combed her hair. "Why did you tell me?" "Apparently, I've decided you're a key." As disconcerted by that as she, Rourke led the way to the door. "If you need to contact me, tell Somerset. He'll put you through. The butler?" Rourke smiled as they descended the stairs. "He'll see to it," was all he said. "I should be gone about 5 days, a week at the most." "I want to see you again." He stopped, took her face in his hands. "I need to see you again." Her pulse jumped, as if it had nothing to do with the rest of her. "Rourke, what's going on here?" "Lieutenant?" He leaned forward, touched his lips to hers. "Indications are we're having a romance." Then he laughed, kissed her again, hard and quick. I believe I could have held a gun to your head and you wouldn't have looked as terrified. Well, you'll have several days to think it through, won't you? She had a feeling several years wouldn't be enough. There, at the base of the stairs, was Somerset, stone-faced, stiff-necked, holding her jacket. She took it and glanced back at Rourke as she shrugged it on. Have a good trip. Thanks. Rourke laid a hand on her shoulder before she could walk out the door. Eve, be careful. Annoyed with himself, he dropped his hands. I'll be in touch. Sure. She hurried out, and when she glanced back, the door was closed. When she opened her car door, she noticed the electronic memo on the driver's seat. Scooping it up, she got behind the wheel. As she headed toward the gate, she flicked on the memo. Rourke's voice drawled out. I don't like the idea of you shivering unless I cause it. Stay warm. Frowning, she tucked the memo in her pocket before experimentally touching the temperature gauge. The blast of heat had her yelping in shock. She grinned all the way to Cop Central. Eve closed herself in her office. She had 2 hours before her official shift began, and she wanted to use every minute of it on the de Blas Star homicides. When her shift kicked in, her duties would spread to a number of cases in varying degrees of progress. This time was her own. As a matter of routine, she queued IRCCA to transmit any and all current data and ordered it in hard copy to review later. The transmission was depressingly brief and added nothing solid. Back, she thought, to deductive games. On her desk, she'd spread out photos of both victims. She knew them intimately now, these women. Perhaps now, after the night she'd spent with Rourke, she understood something of what had driven them. Sex was a powerful tool to use or have used against you. Both of these women had wanted to wield it, to control it. In the end, it had killed them. A bullet in the brain had been the official cause of death, but Eve saw sex as the trigger. It was the only connection between them and the only link to their murderer. Thoughtfully, she picked up the .38. It was familiar in her hand now. She knew exactly how it felt when it fired, the way the punch of it sung up the arm, the sound it made when the mechanism and basic physics sent the bullet flying. Still holding the gun, she queued up the disc she'd requisitioned and watched Sharon de Blas's murder again. What did you feel, you bastard, she wondered. What did you feel when you squeezed the trigger and sent that slug of lead into her, when the blood spewed out, when her eyes rolled up dead? What did you feel? Eyes narrowed, she re-ran the disc. She was almost immune to the nastiness of it now. There was, she noted, the slightest waver in the video, as if he jostled the camera. Did your arm jerk? She wondered. Did it shock you? The way her body flew back, how far the blood splattered? Is that why she could hear the soft sob of breath, the slow exhale, before the image changed? What did you feel? She asked again. Revulsion? Pleasure? Or just cold satisfaction? She leaned closer to the monitor. Sharon was carefully arranged now. The scene set as the camera panned her objectively, and yes, Eve thought, coldly. Then why the jostle? Why the sob? And the note. She picked up the sealed envelope and read it again. How did you know you'd be satisfied to stop at 6? Have you already picked them out? Selected them? Dissatisfied, she ejected the disc, replaced it and the .38. Loading the Star disc, taking the second weapon, Eve ran through the process again. No jostle this time, she noted. No quick, indrawn breath. Everything smooth, precise, exact. You knew this time, she thought, how it would feel, how she'd look, how the blood would smell. But you didn't know her. Or she didn't know you. You were just John Smith in her book, marked as a new client. How did you choose her? And how are you going to pick the next one? Just before 9, when Feeney knocked on her door, she was studying a map of Manhattan. He stepped behind her, leaned over her shoulder, and breathed candy mints. Thinking of relocating? I'm trying geography. Widen view 5%, she ordered the computer. The image adjusted. First murder. Second murder, she said, nodding toward the tiny red pulses on Broadway and in the West Village. My place. There was a green pulse just off 9th Avenue. Your place? He knows where I live. He's been there twice. These are three places we can put him. I was hoping I'd be able to confine the area, but he spreads himself out. And the security. She indulged in one little sigh as she eased back in her chair. Three different systems. STARS was all but non-existent. Electronic doorman inoperable, and it had been, according to the other residents, for a couple of weeks. De Blas had top grade, key code for entry, hand plate, full building security, audio and video. Had to be breached on site. Our time lag only hits one elevator and the victim's hallway. Mine's not as fancy. I could breach the entry. Any decent B&E man could. But I've got a System 5000 police lock on the door. You have to be a real pro to pop it without the master code. Drumming her fingers on the desk, she scowled at the map. He's a security expert. Knows his weapons. Old weapons, Feeney. He'd queued in enough to department procedure to tag me for the primary investigator within hours of the first hit. He doesn't leave fingerprints or bodily fluids, not even a fucking pubic hair. What does that tell you? Feeney sucked air through his teeth, rocked back on his heels. Cop. Military. Maybe paramilitary or government security. Could be a security hobbyist. There are plenty of them. Possible professional criminal, but unlikely. Why unlikely? If the guy was making a living off crime, why murder? There's no profit in either of these hits. So he's taking a vacation, Eve said. But it didn't play for her. Maybe. I've run known sex offenders, crossed with IRCCA. Nobody pops who fits the M.O. You look at this report yet? He asked, indicating the IRCCA transmission. No. Why? I already tagged it this morning. You might be surprised that there were about 100 gun assaults last year, countrywide. About that many accidental, too. He jerked a shoulder. Bootlegged, homemade, black market, collectors. But nobody fits our profile. Nope. He chewed contemplatively. Perverts, either. Though it's a real education to scan the data. Got a favorite. This guy in Detroit. Hit on four before they tagged him. Liked to pick up a lonely heart. Go back to her place. He'd trank her, then he'd strip her down, spray her with glow-in-the-dark red paint, top to toe. Weird. Lethal. Skin's gotta breathe, so she'd suffocate, and while she was smothering to death, he'd play with her. Wouldn't bang her, no sperm or penetration. He'd just run his eager little hands over her. Christ, that's sick. Yeah, well, anyway, he gets a little too eager, a little too impatient with one, starts rubbing her before she's dry, you know? Some of the paint rubs off, and she starts to come around. So he panics, runs. Now our girl's naked, covered with paint, wobbly from the trank, but she's pissed. Runs right outside on the street and starts screaming. The unit comes by, catches on quick because she's glowing like a laser show, and starts a standard search. Our boy's only a couple of blocks away, so they catch him. Don't say it. Red-handed, Feeney said with a wicked grin. Kiss my ass, that's a good one. Caught him red-handed. When Dallas just rolled her eyes, Feeney decided the guys in his division would appreciate the story more. Anyway, we maybe got a pervert. I'll bump up the pervs and the pros. Maybe we'll get lucky. I like the idea of that better than a cop. So do I. Lips pursed, she swiveled to look at him. Feeney, you've got a small collection. Know something about antique firearms. He held out his arms, wrists tight together. I confess, book me. She nearly smiled. You know any other cops who collect?
Sure, a few.
It's an expensive hobby, so most of the ones I know collect reproductions.
Speaking of expensive, he added, fingering her sleeve, nice shirt. You get a raise?
It's borrowed, she muttered, and was surprised that she had to control a flush. Run them for me, Feeney. The ones that have genuine antiques.
Ah, Dallas!
His smile faded away at the thought of focusing in on his own people.
I hate that shit.
So do I. Run them anyway. Keep it to the city for now.
Right.
He blew out a breath, wondered if she realized his name would be on the list.
Hell of a way to start the day.
Now I got a present for you, kid. There was a memo on my desk when I got in. The chief's on his way in to the commander's office. He wants both of us.
Fuck that!
Feeney just looked at his watch. I make it in 5 minutes. Maybe you want to put on a sweater or something, so Simpson doesn't get a good look at that shirt and decide we're overpaid.
Fuck that, too.
Chief Edward Simpson was an imposing figure. Well over 6 feet, fighting trim, he preferred dark suits and vivid ties. His waving brown hair was tipped with gray. It was well known throughout the department that those distinguished highlights were added by his personal cosmetician. His eyes were a steely blue, a color his polls indicated inspired voter confidence that rarely showed humor. His mouth a thin comma of command. Looking at him, you thought of power and authority. It was disillusioning to know how carelessly he used both to do laps in the heady pool of politics. He sat down, steepling his long, creamy hands that winked with a trio of gold rings. His voice, when he spoke, had an actor's resonance.
Commander, Captain, Lieutenant, we have a delicate situation.
And an actor's timing, Eve thought. He paused, let those hard blue eyes scan each face in turn.
You're all aware of how the media enjoy sensationalism, he continued. Our city has, in the 5 years of my jurisdiction, lowered its crime rate by 5%, a full percentage a year. However, with recent events, it isn't the progress that will be touted by the press. Already, there are headlines of these two killings. Stories that question the investigation and demand answers.
Whitney, detesting Simpson in every pore, answered mildly.
The stories lack details, Chief. The Code 5 on the de Blas case makes it impossible to cooperate with the press or feed it.
By not feeding it, Simpson snapped back, we allow them to speculate. I'll be making a statement this afternoon.
He held up a hand even as Whitney started to protest.
It's necessary to give the public something to assess, and by assessing feel confident that the department has the matter under control, even if that isn't the case.
His eyes zeroed in on Eve.
As the primary, Lieutenant, you'll attend the press conference as well. My office is preparing a statement for you to give.
With all respect, Chief Simpson, I can't divulge to the public any details of the case that could undermine the investigation. Simpson plucked a piece of lint from his sleeve.
Lieutenant, I have 30 years of experience. I believe I know how to handle a press conference.
Secondly, he continued, dismissing her by turning back to Commander Whitney,
it's imperative that the link the press has made between the de Blas and Star homicides be broken. The department can't be responsible for embarrassing Senator de Blas personally or damaging his position by joining these cases at the hip.
The murderer did that for us, Eve said between her teeth. Simpson spared her a glance.
Officially, there is no connection. When asked, deny.
When asked, Eve corrected, lie.
Save your personal ethics. This is reality. A scandal that starts here and reverberates to East Washington will come back on us like a monsoon.
Sharon de Blas has been dead over a week, and you have nothing.
We have the weapon, she disagreed. We have possible motive as blackmail and a list of suspects.
His color came up as he rose out of the chair.
I'm head of this department, Lieutenant, and the mess you make is left to me to clean. It's time you stop digging at dirt and close the case.
Sir, Feeney stepped forward, Lieutenant Dallas and I
can both be on traffic detail in a fucking heartbeat, Simpson finished.
fists clenched, Whitney lunged to his feet.
Don't threaten my officers, Simpson. You play your games, smile for the cameras, and rub asses with East Washington, but don't you come in on my turf and threaten my people. They're on, and they stay on. You want to change that? You try going through me.
Simpson's color deepened further. In fascination, Eve watched a vein throb at his temple.
Your people press the wrong buttons on this. It'll be your ass. I've got Senator de Blas under control for the moment, but he's not happy having the primary running off to pressure his daughter-in-law to invade the privacy of her grief and ask her embarrassing, irrelevant questions. Senator de Blas and his family are victims, not suspects, and are to be accorded respect and dignity during this investigation. I accorded Elizabeth Barrister and Richard de Blas respect and dignity. Very deliberately, Eve shut down her temper. The interview was conducted with their consent and cooperation. I was not aware that I was required to receive permission from you or the senator to proceed as I see warranted on this case. And I will not have the press speculating that this department harasses grieving parents or why the primary resisted required testing after a termination.
Lieutenant Dallas's testing was postponed at my order, Whitney said with snarling fury, and with your approval.
I'm well aware of that.
Simpson angled his head. I'm talking about speculation in the press. We will, all of us, be under a microscope until this man is stopped. Lieutenant Dallas's record and her actions will be up for public dissection.
My record will stand it.
And your actions, Simpson said with a faint smile. How will you answer the fact that you're jeopardizing the case and your position by indulging in a personal relationship with a suspect? And what do you think my official position will be if and when it comes out that you spent the night with that suspect?
Control kept her in place, made her eyes flat, had her voice even.
I'm sure you'd hang me to save yourself, Chief Simpson.
Without hesitation, he agreed. Be at City Hall, noon, sharp.
When the door clinked shut behind him, Commander Whitney sat again.
Dickless son of a bitch.
Then his eyes, still sharp as razors, cut into Eve.
What the fuck are you doing?
Eve accepted, was forced to accept, that her privacy was no longer an issue. I spent the night with Rourke. It was a personal decision, on my personal time. In my professional opinion, as primary investigator, he has been eliminated as a suspect. It doesn't negate the fact that my behavior was inadvisable.
Inadvisable? Whitney exploded. Try asinine. Try career suicide. God damn it, Dallas. Can't you hold your glands in check? I don't expect this from you.
She didn't expect it from herself. It doesn't affect the investigation or my ability to continue it. If you think differently, you're wrong. If you pull me off, you'll have to take my badge, too. Whitney stared at her another moment, swore again.
You make damn sure Rourke is eliminated from the shortlist, Dallas. Damn sure he's eliminated or booked within 36 hours. And you ask yourself a question.
I've already asked it, she interrupted, with a giddy relief only she knew she experienced when he didn't call for her badge. Yet. How did Simpson know where I spent last night? I'm being monitored. Second question is, why? Is it on Simpson's authority, or is it de Blas? Or did someone leak the information to Simpson in order to damage my credibility and therefore the investigation?
I expect you to find out.
He jerked a thumb toward the door.
Watch yourself at that press conference, Dallas.
They'd taken no more than 3 strides down the corridor when Feeney erupted.
What the hell are you thinking of? Jesus Christ, Dallas!
I didn't plan it, okay? She jabbed for an elevator, jammed her hands in her pockets. Back off.
He's on the short list. He's one of the last people we know who saw Sharon de Blas alive. He's got more money than God and can buy anything, including immunity.
He doesn't fit type. She stormed into the elevator, barked out her floor.
I know what I'm doing.
You don't know shit.
All the years I've known you, I've never seen you so much as stub your toe on a guy. Now you've fallen fucking over on one.
It was just sex. Not all of us have a nice, comfortable life with a nice, comfortable wife. I wanted someone to touch me, and he wanted to be the one. It's none of your goddamn business who I sleep with. He caught her arm before she could storm out of the elevator. The hell with that! I care about you! She fought back the rage at being questioned, at being probed, at having her most private moments invaded. She turned back, lowering her voice so that those who walked the corridor wouldn't overhear. Am I a good cop, Feeny? You are the best I ever worked with. That's why, she held up a hand. What makes a good cop? He sighed. Brains, guts, patience, nerve, instinct. My brains, my guts, my instincts tell me it's not Rourke. Every time I try to turn it around and pin it on him, I hit a wall. It's not him. I've got the patience, Feeny, and the nerve to keep at it until we find out who. His eyes stayed on hers. And if you're wrong this time, Dallas? If I'm wrong, they won't have to ask for my badge. She had to take a steadying breath. Feeny, if I'm wrong about this, about him, I'm finished. All the way finished. Because if I'm not a good cop, I'm nothing. Jesus, Dallas, don't... She shook her head. Run the cop list for me, will you? I've got some calls to make. Chapter 12. Press conferences left a bad taste in Eve's mouth. She stood on the steps of City Hall, on a stage set by Simpson with his patriotic tie and his gold I Love New York lapel pin. In his Big Brother of the City mode, his voice rose and fell while he read his statement. A statement, Eve thought in disgust, that was riddled with lies, half-truths, and plenty of self-aggrandizements. According to Simpson, he would have no rest until the murderer of young Lola Starr was brought to justice. When questioned as to whether there was any connection between the Starr homicide and the mysterious death of Senator de Blas's granddaughter, he flatly denied it. It wasn't his first mistake, and, Eve thought glumly, it would hardly be his last. The words were barely out of his mouth when he was peppered with shouts from Channel 75's on-air ace, Nadine First. Chief Simpson, I have information that indicates the Starr homicide is linked with the de Blas case, not only because both women were engaged in the same profession. Now, Nadine, Simpson flashed his patient, avuncular smile, we all know that information is often passed to you and your associates, and it's often inaccurate. That's why I set up the Data Verification Center in the first year of my term as Chief of Police. You have only to check with the DVC for accuracy. Eve managed to hold back a snort, but Nadine, with her sharp cat's eyes and lightning brain, didn't bother. My source claims that Sharon de Blas's death was not an accident, as the DVC claims, but murder. That both de Blas and Starr were killed by the same method and the same man. This caused an uproar in the huddle of news teams, a scattershot of demands and questions that had Simpson sweating under his monogrammed shirt. The department stands behind its position that there is no connection between these unfortunate incidents, Simpson shouted out, but Eve saw little lights of panic flickering in his eyes, and my office stands behind the investigators. Those jittery eyes shot to Eve, and she knew in that instant what it was to be picked up bodily and thrown to the wolves. Lieutenant Dallas, a veteran officer with more than 10 years of experience on the force, is in charge of the Starr homicide. She'll be happy to answer your questions. Trapped, Eve stepped forward, while Simpson bent down so that his weaselly aide could whisper rapid-fire advice in his ear. Questions rained down on her, and she waited, filtering them until she found one she could deal with. How was Lola Starr murdered? In order to protect the credibility of the investigation, I'm not at liberty to divulge the method. She suffered through the shouts, cursing Simpson. I will state that Lola Starr, an 18-year-old licensed companion, was murdered with violence and premeditation. Evidence indicates that she was murdered by a client. That fed them for a while, Eve noted. Several reporters checked their links with base. Was it a sexual crime? Someone shouted out. And Eve lifted a brow. I've just stated that the victim was a prostitute and that she was killed by a client. Put it together.
Was Sharon DeBlas also killed by a client?
Nadine demanded. Eve met those cagey feline eyes levelly. The department has not issued any official statement that Sharon DeBlas was murdered.
My source names you as primary in both cases. Will you confirm?
Boggy ground. Eve stepped onto it.
Yes, I'm the primary on several ongoing investigations. Why would a 10-year vet be assigned to an accidental death?
Eve smiled. Want me to define bureaucracy? That drew some chuckles, but it didn't pull Nadine off the scent.
Is the DeBlas case still ongoing?
Any answer would stir a hornet's nest. Eve opted for the truth.
Yes, and it will remain ongoing until I, as primary, am satisfied with its disposition. However, she continued, rolling over the shouts, no more emphasis will be given to Sharon DeBlas's death than any other, including Lola Starr. Any case that comes across my desk is treated equally, regardless of family or social background. Lola Starr was a young woman from a simple family. She had no social status, no influential background, no important friends. Now, after a few short months in New York, she's dead. Murdered. She deserves the best I can give her, and that's what she's going to get. Eve scanned the crowd, zeroed in on Nadine. You want a story, Ms. First?
I want a killer. I figure my wants are more important than yours. So that's all I have to say. She turned on her heel, shot Simpson one fulminating look, then strode away. She could hear him fighting off questions as she headed for her car.
Dallas!
Nadine, in low-heeled shoes built for style and movement, raced after her. I said I'm finished. Talk to Simpson.
Hey, if I want to wade through bullshit, I can call the DVC.
That was a pretty impassioned statement. Didn't sound like Simpson's speechwriter. I like to talk for myself. Eve reached her car and started to open the door when Nadine touched her shoulder.
You like to play it straight.
So do I.
Look, Dallas, we've got different methods, but similar goals.
Satisfied that she had Eve's attention, she smiled. When her lips curved, her face turned into a tidy triangle, dominated by those upslanted green eyes.
I'm not going to pull out the old public's right to know.
You'd be wasting your time.
What I am going to say is we've got two women dead in a week. My information and my gut tells me they were both murdered. I don't figure you're going to confirm that.
You figure right.
What I want's a deal. You let me know if I'm on the right track, and I hold off going out with anything that undermines your investigation. When you've got something solid and you're ready to move on it, you call me. I get an exclusive on the arrest, live.
Almost amused, Dallas leaned against her car. What are you going to give me for that, Nadine? A handshake and a smile?
For that, I'm going to give you everything my source has passed to me.
Everything. Now she was interested.
Including the source?
I couldn't do that if I had to. Point is, I don't.
What I do have, Dallas, is a disc delivered to me at the studio. On the disc are copies of police reports, including autopsies on both victims, and a couple of nasty little videos of two dead women.
Fuck that. If you had half of what you're telling me, you'd have been on air in a heartbeat.
I thought about it, Nadine admitted, but this is bigger than ratings. Hell of a lot bigger. I want a story, Dallas, one that's going to cop me the Pulitzer, the International News Award, and a few other major prizes.
Her eyes changed. Darkened. She wasn't smiling anymore.
But I saw what someone did to those women. Maybe the story comes first with me, but it's not all. I pushed Simpson today, and I pushed you. I like the way you pushed back. You can deal with me, or I can go out on my own. Your choice.
Eve waited. A fleet of taxis cruised by, and a maxibus with its humming electric motor.
We deal.
Before First's eyes could light in triumph, Eve turned on her.
You cross me on this, Nadine. You cross me by so much as an inch, and I'll bury you.
Fair enough. The Blue Squirrel. 20 minutes. The afternoon crowd at the club was too bored to do much more than huddle over their drinks. Eve found a corner table, ordered a Pepsi Classic and the veggie pasta. Nadine slid in across from her. She chose the chicken plate with no oil fries, an indication, Eve thought glumly, of the wide difference between a cop's salary and a reporter's.
"What have you got?" Eve demanded.
"A picture's worth several hundred thousand words." Nadine took a personal palm computer out of her bag, her red leather bag, Eve noted with envy. She had a weakness for leather and bold colors that she could rarely indulge. Nadine popped in the disk, handed Eve the PPC. There was little use in swearing, Eve decided as she watched her own reports flick on screen. Brooding, she let the disk run over Code 5 data, through official medical reports, the ME's findings. She stopped it when the videos began. There was no need to check out death over a meal.
"Is it accurate?" Nadine asked when Eve passed back the computer.
"It's accurate."
"So the guy's some sort of gun freak, a security expert who patronizes companions."
"The evidence indicates that profile."
"How far have you narrowed it down?"
"Obviously not far enough."
Nadine waited while their food was served. "There's got to be a lot of political pressure on you, the de Blas end."
"I don't play politics."
"Your chief does."
Nadine took a bite of her chicken.
Eve smirked as she winced. "Christ, this is terrible!"
Philosophically, she shifted to the fries.
"It's no secret de Blas is frontrunner for the Conservative Party's nomination this summer, or that the asshole Simpson is shooting for governor. Given the show this afternoon, it looks like a cover-up."
At this point, publicly, there is no connection between the cases, but I meant what I said about equality, Nadine. I don't care who Sharon de Blas's granddaddy is. I'm going to find the guy who did her.
"And when you do, is he going to be charged with both murders or only with Stars?"
"That's up to the prosecuting attorney. Personally, I don't give a shit as long as I hang him."
"That's the difference between you and me, Dallas."
Nadine waved a fry, then bit in.
"I want it all. When you get him, and I break the story, the PA's not going to have a choice. The fallout's going to keep de Blas busy for months."
"Now who's playing politics?"
Nadine lifted a shoulder. "Hey, I just report the story. I don't make it. And this one's got it all. Sex, violence, money. Having a name like Rourke's involved is going to shoot the ratings through the roof."
Very slowly, Eve swallowed pasta. "There's no evidence linking Rourke to the crimes."
"He knew de Blas. He's a friend of the family. Christ, he owns the building where Sharon was killed. He's got one of the top weapon collections in the world, and rumor is he's an expert shot."
Eve picked up her drink. "Neither murder weapon can be traced to him. He has no connection with Lola Starr."
"Maybe not, but even as a periphery character, Rourke sells news. And it's no state secret that he and the senator have bumped heads in the past. The man's got ice in his veins," she added with a shrug. "I don't imagine he'd have any problem with a couple of cold-blooded killings, but..." She paused to lift her own drink. "He's also a fanatic about privacy. It's hard to picture him bragging about the murders by sending discs to reporters. Somebody does that, they want publicity as much as they want to get away with a crime."
"An interesting theory."
Eve had had enough. A headache was beginning to brew behind her eyes, and the pasta wasn't going to sit well.
She rose, then leaned over the table, close to Nadine.
"I'll give you another one, formulated by a cop."
"Do you want to know who your source is, Nadine?"
Her eyes glittered.
"Damn right."
"Your source is the killer."
Eve paused, watching the light go out of Nadine's eyes.
"I'd watch my step if I were you, friend."
Eve strode off, heading around behind the stage. She hoped Mavis was in the narrow cubicle that served as a dressing room. Just then she needed a pal. Eve found her, huddled under a blanket and sneezing into a tattered tissue.
"Got a fucking cold."
Mavis glared out of puffy eyes and blew like a bullhorn.
I had to be crazy, wearing nothing but goddamn paint for 12 hours and goddamn lousy February.
Warily, Eve kept her distance.
Are you taking anything?
I'm taking everything!
She gestured to a tabletop littered with over-the-counter drugs and touch-up cosmetics.
It's a fucking pharmaceutical conspiracy, Eve. We've wiped out just about every known plague, disease, and infection. Oh, we come up with a new one every now and again to give the researchers something to do, but none of these bright-eyed medical types, none of the medi-computers, could figure out how to cure the common fucking cold. You know why?
Eve couldn't stop the smile. She waited patiently until Mavis finished another bout of explosive sneezing.
Why? Because the pharmaceutical companies need to sell drugs. You know what a damn sinus tab costs? You could get anti-cancer injections cheaper, I swear it.
You can go to the doctor, get a prescription to eradicate the symptoms.
I got that too. Dab stuff's only good for 8 hours, and I've got a performance tonight. I have to wait until 7 o'clock to take it.
You should be home in bed.
They're exterminating the building. Some wise guy said he saw a cockroach.
She sneezed again, then peered owlishly at Eve from under unpainted lashes.
What are you doing here?
I had some business. Look, get some rest. I'll see you later.
No, stick around. I'm boring myself.
She reached for a bottle of some nasty-looking pink liquid and glugged it down.
Hey, nice shirt. You get a bonus or something?
Or something.
So sit down. I was going to call you, but I've been too busy hacking up my lungs. That was Rourke who came in our fine establishment last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Rourke.
I almost passed out when he walked up to your table. What's the story? You helping him with some security or something?
I slept with him, Eve blurted out, and Mavis responded with a fit of helpless choking.
You? Rourke?
Eyes watering, she reached for more tissue.
Jesus, Eve! Jesus Christ! You never sleep with anybody, and you're telling me you slept with Rourke?
That's not precisely accurate. We didn't sleep. Mavis let out a moan.
You didn't sleep? How long?
Eve jerked a shoulder. I don't know. I stayed the night. 8, 9 hours, I guess.
Hours.
Mavis shuddered delicately.
And you just kept going.
Pretty much.
Is he good?
Stupid question, she said quickly.
You wouldn't have stayed otherwise. Wow, Eve, what got into you? Besides his incredibly energetic cock.
I don't know. It was stupid. She dragged her hands through her hair. It's never been like that for me before. I didn't think it could... Well, that I could. It's just never been important, then all of a sudden...
Shit. Honey.
Mavis snaked a hand from under her blanket and took Eve's tensed fingers.
You've been blocking off normal needs all your life because of things you barely remember. Somebody just found a way to get through. You should be happy.
It puts him in the pilot's seat, doesn't it?
Oh, that's bullshit.
Mavis interrupted before Eve could go on.
Sex doesn't have to be a power trip.
It sure as hell doesn't have to be a punishment. It's supposed to be fun. And now and again, if you're lucky, it gets to be special. Maybe. She closed her eyes. Oh, God, Mavis. My career's on the line.
What are you talking about?
Rourke's involved in a case I'm working on.
Oh, shit.
She had to break off and blow again.
You're not going to have to bust him for something, are you?
No. Then more emphatically, no. But if I don't tie it all up fast with a nice tidy bow, I'll be out. I'll be finished. Somebody's using me, Mavis. Her eyes sharpened again. They're clearing the path in one direction, tossing roadblocks in the other. I don't know why. If I don't find out, it's going to cost me everything I have.
Then you're going to have to find out, aren't you?
Mavis squeezed Eve's fingers. She would find out, Eve promised herself. It was after 10 p.m. when she let herself into the lobby of her building. If she didn't want to think just then, it wasn't a crime. She'd had to swallow a reprimand from the chief's office for veering from the official statement during the press conference. The commander's unofficial support didn't quite ease the sting. When she was inside her apartment, she checked her email. She knew it was foolish, this nagging hope that she'd find a message from Rourke. There wasn't one. But what she found had her flesh crawling with ice. The video message was unnamed, sent from a public access. The little girl, her dead father, the blood. Eve recognized the angles of the official department record, the one taken to document the site of murder and justified termination. The audio came over it, a playback of her auto record of the child's screams, her beating on the door, the warning, and all the horror that followed. "You bastard," she whispered. "You're not going to get to me with this. You're not going to use that baby to get to me." But her fingers shook as she ejected the disc, and she jolted when her intercom rang. "Who is it?"
"Hennessy, from apartment 2D.
The pale, earnest face of her downstairs neighbor flicked on screen.
"I'm sorry, Lieutenant Dallas. I didn't know what to do exactly. We've got trouble down here in the Feinstein apartment."
Eve sighed and let the image of the elderly couple flip into her mind. Quiet, friendly, television addicts.
"What's the problem?"
"Mr. Feinstein's dead, Lieutenant. Keeled over in the kitchen while his wife was out playing Mahjong with friends. I thought maybe you could come down."
"Yeah," she sighed again. "I'll be there. Don't touch anything, Mr. Hennessy, and try to keep people out of the way."
Out of habit, she called dispatch, reported an unattended death and her presence on the scene. She found the apartment quiet, with Mrs. Feinstein sitting on the living room sofa with her tiny white hands folded in her lap. Her hair was white as well, a snowfall around a face that was beginning to line despite anti-aging creams and treatments. The old woman smiled gently at Eve.
"I'm so sorry to trouble you, dear."
"It's okay. Are you all right?"
"Yes, I'm fine."
Her soft blue eyes stayed on Eve's.
"It was our weekly game, the girls and mine. When I got home, I found him in the kitchen. He'd been eating a custard pie. Joe was overly fond of sweets."
She looked over at Hennessy, who stood, shifting uncomfortably from foot to foot.
"I didn't know quite what to do, and went knocking on Mr. Hennessy's door."
"That's fine. If you'd stay with her for a minute, please," she said to Mr. Hennessy. The apartment was set up similarly to her own. It was meticulously neat, despite the abundance of knick-knacks and memorabilia. At the kitchen table, with its centerpiece of china flowers, Joe Feinstein had lost his life and considerable dignity. His head was slumped, half in, half out, of a fluffy custard pie. Eve checked for a pulse, found none. His skin had cooled considerably. At a guess, she put his death at 1:15, give or take a couple of hours. "Joseph Feinstein," she recited dutifully, "male, approximately 115 years of age. No signs of forced entry, no signs of violence. There are no marks on the body." She leaned closer, looked into Joe's surprised and staring eyes, sniffed the pie. After finishing her prelim notes, she went back to relieve Hennessy and interview the deceased's widow. It was midnight before she was able to crawl into bed. Exhaustion snatched at her, like a cross and greedy child. Oblivion was what she wanted, what she prayed for. "No dreams," she ordered her subconscious. "Take the night off." Even as she closed her eyes, her bedside link blipped.
"Fry in hell, whoever you are," she muttered.
Then dutifully wrapped the sheet around her naked shoulders and switched it on.
"Lieutenant?"
Rourke's image smiled at her.
"Did I wake you?"
"You would have in another 5 minutes,"
She shifted as the audio hissed with a bit of space interference.
I guess you got where you were going, all right.
I did. There was only a slight delay in transport.